Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. We are living a Thanksgiving dream with Thanksgiving Seems, because it seems like it's Thanksgiving. This is Knowing Is Half the Podcast, and I am Race to Canis.
Wait a minute, is this coming out after Thanksgiving?
No, this is coming out like in like 2 days, Chan.
Oh, wow.
Surprise.
Okay. Yeah, cool. I'm Robert Clark Chan.
Oh, yes. Oh, right. She's not going to introduce herself, because that's not TV's Gina Hippolito. We are a professional.
Don't make me do it. You have to treat me special. Come on, guys.
We have a very, very special guest. We have the best and head writer of a video game called WWE. What is it? 2K25?
Most of them. A lot of them. There you go.
Andrea Listenberger's with us once again. Thank you. And episode 5 coming out soon. Did I spoil something?
No, it's coming out soon. Chapter five is coming out soon. December 5th. You got it. After this comes out, right? This is coming out in two days. In Thanksgiving.
Oh my God. I'm going to need this turned around.
You know, mumps. It's all good.
Oh my God. What is that? We have lost control of this show completely. Maybe we never had it. But anyway, Robert Clark Chan picked out for us a quote-unquote Thanksgiving episode.
Look.
It's quote-unquote
hard to find Thanksgiving cartoons. And the Discord chimes in way too late for us to actually do anything with it. So sometimes you dig and the only thing that comes up is a episode of Carol Burnett that calls itself a Thanksgiving episode.
It was definitely a Thanksgiving episode.
There was one segment that vaguely referenced the holiday, and that was it.
3 minutes. We have three. And also, Chan, normally the cartoons we watch on this show are 22 minutes long. Mm-hmm. This episode of the Carol Burnett Show was like 51 minutes long.
It was so long, Gina fled to the middle of the country to get away from it.
That's true. She said, "There's no way I'm doing that. I'm leaving for the Midwest."
Yeah.
And she doesn't even love it. There's no reason for her to be in the Midwest. No. I think she jumped halfway to New Jersey, and that's just where she ended up.
That makes sense.
My working theory.
She tried to fly to New Jersey.
She broke her glasses and couldn't see the toys anymore. You'll understand that later.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. Because, I mean, here's the thing. Like, Carol Burnett and the Carol Burnett Show is a goddamn classic, a staple of American comedy. So many people reference it as like the thing that made them want to do comedy. Even today, this is the first time I've ever watched anything of the Carol Burnett Show. I don't know about you, Ray. Andrea, do you have any, have you touched the show?
I have seen it before. Have you never seen even sketches from it in isolation? Clips?
Possibly.
Moments?
At some point I must have, but it's never been, I've never seen a significant chunk of it, just like in passing. I know all of these people.
Sure, I know what
they do. I've seen them in other things.
I'm aware that comedy exists somewhere, and I'm aware of Carol Burnett, and I'm aware that there was a Carol Burnett Show, but if it wasn't on Nick at Night, I probably didn't watch it when I was a kid. I've seen many, many classic old shows. You know, some of which I hated, like Benny Hill or Laugh-In.
Oh my God. Sorry, team. Why are you naming the two greatest comedies of all time?
Oh, Lord.
As things that you do not care for.
Chan, Benny Hill? Benny Hill in the year 2025, you're going to stump for?
Laugh-In, I did watch a lot. And that was, I don't know how much it influenced me, but I definitely watched a lot as a child.
I watched Benny Hill a lot too. And Hee Haw. You're going to go bat for Hee Haw now too, Chan?
Here's hated Hee Haw.
Okay.
But, we have that at least. The Benny Hill Show, I mean, A, yakety sax. I mean, slapstick. B, titties. I am sorry, but as an 8-year-old, I had such limited access to titties. And if Benny Hill is what's going to get them for me, then that's what I'm going to do, man.
Yeah, that just made me uncomfortable when I was younger. Andrew, how about you? What of these old classic shows, which one are you the most mad at me for not liking?
Well, you know, I was never a Benny Hill person. I will say, you know, I feel like Carol Burnett was something that I did watch. Not necessarily this episode. I don't think this episode crossed my path.
New to you.
Laughing, maybe we like Laughing. But you know, they come around. They come around.
Yeah, look, this is classic comedy. But you know, but I grew up watching what My Three Dads and Dick Van Dyke Show, Mr. Ed. I watched so much Mr. Ed. I made them do it for an episode of this show recently. You know, and I the Donna Hold Reed on. Show.
Back up. Yeah. You yeah. watched My Three Dads as a child?
Or I'm sorry, My Three Sons.
Uh-huh. Okay.
My Three Dads is a wonderful podcast. Myself, Robert Clark Chan, and Marshall Gibbons. That we do every once in a blue moon. Whenever we have a parenting topic and some free time. Hey, honestly, holidays are coming up, Chan. I bet we get another episode in.
The fact that it took me more than like 10 seconds. I was like, that doesn't sound right. Why does that not sound right?
They pitched it and had to change it. My Three Sons was fantastic, by the way. I'm sad that they don't still have that on the air.
Reboot that shit.
There's a YouTube channel called Our Three Dads. In our family, ex-husbands become unlikely co-parents. Twins gain a third dad, and modern love proves hilariously relatable under one roof.
Wait, what is this?
This is a YouTube channel. You can go to our3dads.com. Are these different people? No, these are the same people.
Huh.
I will be watching Full House reruns instead. Thank you.
Fair.
Oh, no way. Where could I stream My Three Dads?
I can't stand Full House, and yet I would still rather watch that than whatever this thing is.
Can I tell you, I just typed in My Three Dads, and the fourth thing that popped up was Spotify, the My Three Dads show, and it's actually our show. Wow. I'm honestly very happy about that.
You do understand how web browsers work, right? And then if it's your own thing, it's probably going to pop up because you've hit it multiple times already.
You're not going to make me tell the story about my Mormon friend again, are you?
What? Oh, no. Please.
Don't. No. Go listen to old episodes. You'll hear that story 9 or 10 times at this point. Too many. Anyway, the Carol Burnett Show, the Thanksgiving Day episode, so this episode is 51 minutes long or thereabouts, and the Thanksgiving portion of it is the opening dance number of about 4 minutes maybe. And then the rest of it has literally F all to do with Thanksgiving. What are we doing here?
Variety shows back in the day were something else.
I was expecting like a Thanksgiving weave of the sketch concepts all the way through the show. And instead I got a show that didn't know Thanksgiving existed after the opening number.
Shit, man. There was a whole dance number. You could have just thrown a turkey in there. Didn't even bother.
The insurance sketch, which we'll get to in a second. You could have set that at Thanksgiving. Just have it set at Thanksgiving. That's it. Change nothing.
Mm-hmm. They could have set the fire because the turkey was in the oven.
Anything. Ooh, yeah. Yes. Perfect. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Very disappointing.
Cannon could have been dressed as a sexy pilgrim. For a song. I loved it. So many options.
So, yeah. So, my first three notes of this opening number, we're just going to dive into it. Which is, we open with a song, Diane also, Cannon, like, and Paul Linder here.
As this pilgrims. Is 1971, so you gotta go in knowing that it's a different vibe. Like, obviously you can't go in thinking that it's gonna be, you know, like, bam, 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 joke, joke, hard joke, you know.
Not
like,
at all.
Tearing all over the place.
Look, I'm a fan of the Monty Pythons. I'm a fan of the old-timey sketch stuff, the... What was it?
Monty Python, this is not.
Yeah,
Monty Python's whack for sure.
Monty Python was in response to this sort of thing. So, like, we're going
Monty
even
Monty Python sort of came out in the late 60s. I mean, and this is season four, so they came out around the same time.
It absolutely did not.
Monty Python's Flying Circus did not come out in the 1960s.
Jesus Christ. Here goes Ray Googling.
Monty Python's Flying Circus is a British surreal show that debuted in 1969. Thank you. 1969 to 1974. Don't tease me about the Pythons, Robert Clark Chan.
But I feel like what Chan's trying to say is that it's like the pattern's different, right? Like, this is from an era, even though like the time the year itself might be similar. Like, you know, when you're going to the Carol Burnett show, you're not getting like bam, 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 even like with, you know, the sort of surrealist nature of Monty Python. You're getting, you know, I'm going to sit down and it's maybe a little bit edgy because, oh my gosh, like Carol Burnett, her hair is short. She's a woman. There's multiple people in the cast who are women. They're all white though. So, and also you can hold the hands of your child as you watch this and there's dancing and it's all very tame, but you're not getting like wacky shit that doesn't make sense. It's a little tamer.
Yeah, and there are moments that feel pretty modern, but as a general rule, this is very old school vaudeville, you know, like let's settle in for a show, everybody.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I was comparing maybe to Bob Newhart sketches back in the day, or some of the old radio stuff. Like, was it Bob and Tom or something like that?
First off, how fucking dare you?
Yes.
Bob Newhart's sketches still hold up.
I think these sketches hold up to a great degree. The one with the stage play, I mean, I thought that, well, we'll talk about it. I thought that worked today.
I would agree with you, Ray, on that.
Like, I'm not even mad about the comedy. Like, I thought a lot of the comedy absolutely, like, I saw where the premise, as soon as they, like, the opening two, we all have written a lot of sketch comedy. The first, like, two lines of the sketch are said to establish what we're doing, and I guarantee all three of us were like, I know exactly every beat that this sketch is about to take, and we were right.
That's what irritated me, just like, You're not even gonna like slow roll this thing. You're just gonna say, "Hey, we're gonna fall down a lot in this thing." Okay, let's go.
But when you're gonna fall down a lot, and the you that's doing the falling down are these performers, okay, yeah, you could do it. Because I mean, Carol Burnett, like, icon of physical comedy, I would
100%.
Yeah,
so I will watch her fall down.
That's
she doesn't even need a premise for me to watch her fall down, to be honest with you.
As a performer, she's still fucking stellar. And like, you can watch her just for her own, just her performance, period.
Yes. I thought she did a wonderful job. Like, I, as annoyed as I was watching a 51
minute show. You heard it here, folks. We like Carol Burnett. I thought
she was great.
She's okay by us. She maybe has a future in this town.
It turns out she's pretty good at what she does. No, I got no complaints there. And I enjoyed Paul Lind. I enjoy him as a performer. He's very, very funny. I mean, I like him doing his bits.
You know what? I feel like I like him more and more every year. There was a point where he felt very old and vaudevillian and like over the top and like, all right, old guy doing your shtick, whatever. But the older I get, the more I'm just like, man, that's just pretty sharp. You know what?
He knows his game.
I dig it.
Dude, I know exactly what you mean, because I feel like I used to, with those sort of exaggerated performances, I'd be like, oh, we get it. We understand it. But the dumber something is now, the more I love it. 100%.
Yeah, I like easy watches, and this was an easy look. I've gotten back into painting miniatures again for the first time in like 8 years.
God, we're
and
all.
This was a wonderful program to just sit back here in the garage at my workstation and just paint models while watching the Carol Burnett show on a Saturday night or whenever the heck it was I watched this, and I'll be, you know, it was a good experience. I enjoyed it. I got some good work done on the models, and I felt good about it. I was like, you know what? This is fine. This is not making me mad. There's a certain craft here that I can appreciate, even though not everything is going to hit for me. It is a variety show. The idea is that not everything's going to hit for you, but something in there will.
Yeah. I'm just there was a time when there was just dancing on television.
Just weird, right?
A bunch of people choreographed dancing, and okay. Now that I say that out loud, I'm like, oh right, there's Dancing with the Stars. That is still a thing that happens. I don't watch it because why? Why would I?
But it's also a competition on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, this, that's
they
true.
Just dance, and they dance. Was it three times they danced?
There were a lot of dances. I know that.
Yeah,
and then they sang besides dancing for no reason besides the dancing.
I had a sense memory when the singing was happening of watching the Muppet Show and being like, "Fucking get to the puppets, man. Why is this person who I don't know singing a song that I do not care about? I need to see some exploding fish. God damn it." And that was television. That was television in 1971.
And that's television, baby.
Well, look, the opening, I would say this here, because my three notes here are like, oh, we got a song with pilgrims. Okay, it's Thanksgiving. Yep. Great. And then my next was, Chan, why are you making us watch 51 minutes of television? I've been over that already. I will move on. Yeah. And then the dance number seemed to feature multiple scenes of spousal abuse from wives to their husbands by grabbing their ear while they're holding guns and yanking them off stage violently. And that just really struck me as being like, I guess that's a thing that used to happen.
In the 70s or in the Pilgrim times?
That's what I was trying to figure out. Like, what are we doing? Or maybe it's just an old vaudevillian thing to just represent a certain thing. And it's just a thing they all know about. I don't know. But it happens so often in this dance number that a pilgrim would be holding his musket and being like, oh, do I shoot the turkey? And the wife comes out all mad like, nah, and then grabs his ear and yanks him off stage. That happened like four or five times. I swear to God. Yeah. And I'm like, what?
Because what is this dumb? Because pilgrim hunters are dumb and they're screwing things up, and like there's a time that like they uncovered a couple fucking, and you know, it's like they're not doing things correct.
And everyone knows that to correct the actions of someone else, you have to grab that person by the ear specifically,
100%,
give it a little yank.
Mm-hmm.
So when can we expect that in the new WWE game? I guess is what I'm saying.
December 5th. We plugged that appropriately at the beginning of the show.
You're not listening,
five, everybody. Get it in there.
I am surprised that your wife has not done that to you on multiple occasions. I'm surprised you didn't see that and go, oh, yes, I know exactly what that is, because that happens to me on a semi-regular basis.
Please, Chan, she would absolutely never even consider doing that to me when a cupped hand to the face works just fine.
That's true. That a little sharper gets your attention a little faster.
You know,
it's like horseradish versus a jalapeno.
That was a phenomenal reference. I'm not gonna lie. Wow, I had nothing more to say.
Wow.
Look, they shoot turkeys out of the sky somehow, and then this turkey thing falls from the sky. Somebody grabs it, and then they just dance around.
Yep,
it's like that's what we're doing for three. I think there's a song too. Can we play some of this, Chan? I mean, we got to play some of the song, right?
Play
like
the song. Play.
We
got to
play
song.
A little bit of every song. That's the Ray guarantee on this show.
And so forth.
Well, I would like to hear them singing, but yeah, anyway, it's fine. You don't really need to hear it. It's fine. It's pilgrims.
Turkey, turkey, pilgrims. Turkey, turkey, pilgrims. Dancing and what? I pull the ear. That's essentially it.
Oh, that wasn't Chan playing it. That was okay. No, I got confused there for a second because that was on top of it.
I don't even remember that there were lyrics.
Maybe there wasn't.
We have our muskets loaded and ready, so let the shoot get underway.
Bye, baby bunting, daddy's gonna hunting. Happy Thanksgiving Day.
Man, there was a lot more hunting in old Thanksgiving stuff than I feel comfortable with.
It's all they do, apparently.
I mean, today the song would be much more centric on go to the store, order in advance, get everything in.
Fucking Marie Callender's. Let's do the what is this musket bullshit?
Chan, if you bring a musket to our Thanksgiving dinner, I'm going to be very upset with you.
Now I have to get a musket.
Now I said it only because now you have to. I don't know
where to find one, but I'll. Now I'm committed to the bit. Jesus, thanks, Ray.
At least wear the hat. Can you at least wear the hat for me?
That sounds too much like a weird kink, and I don't want any part of it.
Well, I will not force my kink upon you, for I am not a monster.
Appreciated.
Oh, my God. So the first sketch is the insurance sketch. We're done with Thanksgiving, by the way, folks. That was it. I hope you enjoyed it. We're
Happy
done with Thanksgiving for 47 more minutes.
All Heart Homeowners Insurance.
Yeah. All Heart Homeowners Insurance, where the man is selling to the couple. It's very expensive. It's $700 for the insurance. But, you know, when you go to file a claim, they're all heart. And if you can't already tell where this sketch is going, I don't even need to ask the question because I guarantee all three of us was like, okay, here we go. I know every beep. But, and
I mean, you're here for Paul Lynn to just be like,
Paul Lynn like, being evil.
Smirm. As the salesman and then coming back, trying to not pay out. It's fucking fantastic.
So it's
the writing is shit, but there were no jokes per se, but just the performances all around.
The jokes were the performances. We have a scenario we can see as an audience. We understand all sides of this, that he is flattering them and telling them what they want to hear. He's obviously lying. The company is obviously shady, and it's him, you know, working his way through it. And we're kind of rooting for him because he is our protagonist in a way. And he sells the couple this very expensive insurance. Cut to, and this is like a 5-6 minute sketch for the record. Cut to, the house has been burned down. They're standing in the ruins of their burned down house. They call Paul Lynn back for the insurance check, and he doesn't want to pay it. He wants to pay them $63 and denies that there was a fire, which, okay, you know, pretty standard comedic premise. And then a camera crew shows up so he can give them a pretend check or something for a TV commercial because they said like 80% of what you pay goes into our commercials. Or something to that effect, which is, you know, kind of funny. I appreciated that concept.
Yeah.
It felt like they needed a way to get out of the sketch. I'm calling bullshit on the ending. I've been there. How do I end this sketch?
Dude, buttons are fucking hardest.
What's the button to this sketch?
How many times have we added a character who just shows up just at the last 30 seconds of the sketch to end the sketch? We've all done it.
More times than you'd like to admit. And that's when you know that you couldn't think of a button for the sketch.
That is correct. That's the lazy person's way out.
I mean, fucking Mr. Show, like, actually said out loud, yeah, we just transitioned into sketches so it wouldn't have to write buttons. And that was it.
That was Monty Python. Monty Python would just, as soon as the sketch lost steam, boom, another person just walks in and starts the next sketch. Like, hell yeah. It was great. What the cartoons were for.
I do feel like either the network note was they can't get screwed completely. Like they have to get paid at the end because we have sponsors who might be insurance companies, or they didn't want it to end badly. Like the show obviously is supposed to be like a big warm hug, So like they have to, like it's kind of weird how they got the check, but they got the money.
No, that's
make
my
them
question.
Feel good
because the
they're
real?
On TV. I don't know.
Yeah.
It ended so fast. There was a TV crew there.
Yes.
We were happy. Carol Burnett was happy. She sold it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
It's a little awkward. And anyway, let's go to a Diane Cannon musical number, to which I just wrote, yawn.
I wrote, she sings a song. That was my note. I also wrote, because I looked it up, she is still alive today. Ta-da.
Oh, wow. Dang. Yeah, she had, I stumbled across some stuff, and I recall there being a thing about how she had such a great rapport with Johnny Carson. Like she was on that show constantly. And like, I guess they had like a flirty kind of thing. And it's like, you know, it was just fun. I noted that Carol introduced her as sexy and pretty and very talented. I'm like, oh, okay. So this is like the Sydney Sweeney of her day. Like, oh, hot girl can kind of act, maybe do a song. That's what she's there for.
Well, I didn't know much about her, and I don't know if you guys know much about her besides her relationship with Cary Grant.
Didn't know that either.
End of my knowledge of her.
Well, that's one more fact that I knew. Should have given it up because now we're even.
Now we all know.
Well, we all know that, you know what? She sang a song on this show.
She sang a song.
What did she sing? I sure couldn't tell you.
Nope. Yeah, what was the name of the song, any of us?
At some point, I was like, I should figure out what this song is. Like, maybe I could write down a couple lyrics and Google it. I didn't.
Nope. So we're going to the next sketch, everybody. And honestly, this is probably my favorite part of the entire... This is my favorite part of the entire show. I thought this sketch worked. It would work today. You'd have to tighten it up a little bit. But like as a premise, I've seen stage plays that are, you know, this is almost like Noises Off or stuff like that, where, you know, the show goes terribly wrong.
Off.
Yeah.
And that's why I guess. OK. Yeah. In 2025, we know the premise. We've seen it multiple times.
That's right.
There's a Is it a continuing show or something that is basically the show that goes wrong?
Yeah, the play
show that goes wrong. That's right.
And I think it's still running in New York. There's like a spinoff show. What do you call it? There's like a I don't know. It's something called like the play that goes wrong at Christmas time too. I think they have now. Oh,
something. Yeah, yeah, they've spun it off. You're right.
Or the Peter Pan play that goes wrong. There's multiple spinoffs of the same show because to Ray's point, the premise works. It just works.
Yeah.
You know what it's well, you know what it is because it's in the fucking title of the show and it works.
Yeah, yeah. To me, like even if back in at that time, like show us rather than tell us at the beginning.
They laid it out so any moron could understand what was about to happen. Once again, the first two lines of this sketch happened, and we all knew exactly what we were about to be watching because it's what is his name? Funt and Mundane have been doing the same play for 54 weeks straight. This is their final performance that all the big wigs are there to see, and they open it by dressing down all of the tech and all of the props and all of the people who work on the show behind the scenes and telling them how miserably terrible they are. And then saying, now we need to do a good show because it's important to us, the performers. So the entire sketch is them getting effed with by every technical way physically possible.
Yeah. I guess I just wanted to see them being assholes without like stating it openly. Just like them being shitty to the stage crew. And then when things start going wrong, like, oh, right. Because they're total jerks.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Whatever. But no, yeah.
Look at the chandelier hangs too low from the sky. You know, the wrong props are being handed out. The couch falls apart.
Collapsing sofa.
The phone rings after she picked it up. I mean, you know, it's just one, you know, hilarious moment after another. And I've seen Noises Off. I went to go see it out here. Last
you
year,
and Noises Off.
That Noises was, off that was stage show. Yeah,
No, I'm sorry, that was college. Yeah, super fun.
I've never been in Noises Off. No, I don't know. If there's a good role in there for me.
Noise is on only.
Jesus Christ, man. That's all of them.
You think I, you wait, Chan, you think I would, you think people would believe me as someone stupid? Weird.
I like the closet gag. The door opening for some reason just like hit as an especially funny, heightening. She gets caught in the window and we just see her butt for a long time. Like, eh, how can you go wrong with that? A banana as a gun.
The banana gun got me. Also, when she was in the window and then the husband came in and it's like, where is she? And the butt's hanging out.
But like what the bit where the gun goes off or so they're trying to find it.
He gets shot by the banana. Yeah.
She says, why don't you just peel it? Like, God, that was just a perfect delivery. And just openly laughed out loud. L-O-L'd, if you will.
You know, my next note here is why is none of this about Thanksgiving? Again, you could have set the play at Thanksgiving. I don't know. You could have even just said our final show, the Thanksgiving show, anything at all to mildly tie it in. And they just at this point actively chose not to. And it made me so mad. But yes, the actors get through it. Good job. And honestly, like to me, this was the absolute highlight of the entire show, of overly long sketches and musical numbers and dance numbers and what have you.
Even more than the Diane Cannon song that we all remembered.
You know, I'll be honest. Just barely Diane Cannon song, while great, did not rank highly for me on the tiering of this episode.
And to be even like it, the sketches are too long, much like SNL.
Absolutely.
They just run far too long. Not enough jokes. I feel like there are more jokes in this sketch than an average SNL sketch of the same length, of the same too long length.
That's why it worked.
It's like they had to, because they filled, we watched a version that didn't have like the question and answer section that the show normally has.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
But this normally, it's like a lot, at least the episodes that I saw, you know, she normally talks to the crowd and says, you know, welcome pies, things. Maybe it didn't because it's the Thanksgiving show. I'm not sure. But like they're filling like an hour and they didn't have that many. I mean, there's a lot of dancing, but they didn't have that many sketches. I do not disagree with you that they need to pace this up. But do they not want to write more sketches? Do they not want to produce more sketches? Do they have a budget on the props and the wardrobe? I don't know.
Well, I mean, there are three sketches. There are three dance numbers, one straight musical number.
With big production, like not just like so you think you can dance style people dancing, like big production.
I mean, that feels like probably the normal ratio, right? Because it's a variety show.
I guess so.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Earth's first line of defense has a breakthrough in space technology, Magnalock. It defies the law of gravity. Activate StarCom equipment. Control StarCom weapons. Figures and vehicles each sold separately. Magnalock, a mighty power for StarCom. A
deadly threat in the hands of the Shadow Force. Who will survive?
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
I'm not, well, to be fair, we have another, to me, low point is we have a dance number. And I didn't write down anything that happened. It was just like a ballet. They just do a ballet number for like 4 minutes, 5 minutes in the middle of this show. And my comments here are, wow, 70s TV kind of sucked.
It's culture, Ray. Come on now.
My second note, Chan, I may never forgive you for this. And my third note was, I assume this scene is to allow people to go to the bathroom.
The point where I recognized that this was the childhood Muppet Show feeling of just like, get to the good part. Get to the good bit.
So you didn't get the Thanksgiving subtext here?
Maybe I need you to explain it to me, please.
Okay. Well, you know, there was this man who was longing for his other half.
Okay. Now, okay.
The other half, you know, represented in the form of his partner, this woman. Mm-hmm. But for some, that other half is the holiday spirit that is Thanksgiving. And that's what they were really trying to convey in this moment.
I felt like the man represents the colonizers coming over from mm-hmm. Europe, and then the indigenous people is the woman. But she leaves, she departs, and they're left alone in an untamed wilderness, not knowing what to do and hoping that they return so that that we have the Thanksgiving reunion, which we do at the end.
But only after the applause, after mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. thing ends. I mean, it's really obvious to anyone who has a little bit of culture.
It's a metatextual commentary on the American dream.
I will say, like, I think, like, the choreography was actually pretty cool here. It's just it's not cool for TV. It's not cool for TV, especially when seen through the eyes of 2025, you know, what we're used to, like, putting a camera in more or less one angle on this with no lighting, no effects, no nothing. Like, we need stuff. Our brains need things. They've ruined our brains.
They have, yeah. There was the one nice transition thing where he's together with the woman, and then the dancers all come in with like the fans and stuff like that, and you know they swirl around, and when they part, he's alone, you know, like the woman has like disappeared. I was like, that was a nice little bit of TV magic.
Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
We have officially talked about this dance number considerably longer than I ever expected us to.
No culture, Ray. You heard it
none
here
for
first.
Me, thanks.
Pass the potatoes, look, not the green beans.
The green beans are what I'm all about, first off.
Ray's wife is going to grab him by the ear and drag him to the ballet.
Man, when like she that. Does that at our Thanksgiving Day dinner, I'm gonna remember this moment and be like, God dang it, he was right. What are you gonna do? So our last sketch of the episode
sort of.
Is a soap opera parody called As the Stomach Turns. And I didn't find this sketch to be very successful at all.
I think I disagree with that. I like this because it was stupid.
Yeah, look, it's a genre parody. They're doing like all the stuff you would see in a heightened version of a soap opera, which is itself already heightened. And I don't think they went far enough with it to make the premise and bit work for me. It was more of they were just like saying the tropes as opposed to like exploring and like blowing up the trope. I don't know.
The first gag where she's macking on some dude who's the pool boy. And then she's you should come over 4 times a week. Cause guess what? I'm getting a pool. And he was like, whoa, that's amazing. I'd be the first one on my route. And I'm like, you know what? That was a pretty funny bit.
That was funny. I like that. You're right.
Although the main thing that I noticed was that guy. That's what passed for like handsome pool boy in 1971. The man was not that attractive.
No, he's available, Chan. That's what works.
I see. Okay.
Available and wearing shorts.
Ooh.
Mm,
great combo.
That's as hot as it gets in 1971.
Network television, too.
Oof, oh, yeah.
I just wrote, we got a bunch of like gender jokes from the 1970s in here. I found it to be a very pedestrian sketch. I don't even remember a whole lot about it, honestly. Like, other than I wrote here, she weighs 194. What are we doing here?
What's the problem with that? What is your problem with that?
I don't remember. I remember it making me mad that
because she wanted the money. Because she wanted the money from her friend who was giving money to everyone else.
Because Carol Burnett, no way, shape, or form weighs 194 pounds.
Hold on. Because I took this note for a different reason, and that's why I was asking you specifically why you mentioned it. You say you have a problem with it. This is the gag.
You know, a friend like you is worth her weight in gold.
Do you mean that, Louise?
Of course I do.
I weigh 194.
That is a solid ass joke.
Yeah.
And then she goes, "You don't look it," and she says, "My girdle is killing me." That's 2025. That plays.
We got gender jokes. We got weight jokes. It just didn't hit for
it's
me.
But it's not a weight joke.
I get it. I just read it wrong in the moment. I didn't vibe with it, and maybe I wasn't paying attention.
A woman is worthy of his time if she's over 115. So.
Yeah. What is happening? Lord.
The Canoga twins, Harvey Korman doing Paul Lind is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Stupid. And I mean that in the positive sense.
I have never liked Breaking on Stage. And that's, you know, that's a personal bugaboo of mine. That's not everybody's cup of tea. Some people fucking love it. But his thing, he's the Jimmy Fallon of the 1960s and 70s. He just like breaks at the drop of a hat. He almost broke here. And to be fair, it is Paul Lynde. So I'm not that mad at him, but you know.
It was fine. It didn't, like I say, everything doesn't have to hit for me. I really liked the previous sketch, and I'm just going to go with that.
Hey, you know what? If you love the ballet and this one didn't hit for you, that's okay. That's okay.
I only like the culture.
Vicki Lawrence was really fun for me in this one, too. I got to say, like, she had just the smallest little part in here. But like, I love Vicki Lawrence. She's great.
I honestly,
and her is like the daughter, like she just had like little like lines that could have been throwaway, but she said them in like just such a way that made me very, very happy. They made me very happy.
I basically only know her from Mama's House?
Mama's House, yeah.
So like to see her that young, obviously, you know, like she was wearing old makeup, but like that young, it was like, oh yeah, that's the same person. Wild. Which one is this? There's a whole sequence that I also love. Basically, she's like, "Oh, I'll never abandon you," or whatever. And they're like, "Oh, you know, for $50,000, just sign this paper." And she just fucking sells her out in an instant, which I love. And then they Diane like ups the ante.
I'll give you 60,000.
Do I hear 70?
All right, 70.
Your bid, Nutsy.
8.
Your bid, Nutsy. Like the delivery on that fucking slays. I'm sorry.
But also like that one line of Paul Lind, you know exactly everything about Paul Lind as a performer. Often copied, I'll just say. In every cartoon since 1971.
Since even before.
You heard it here first. And then our final number, what the hell was this? This was Nightmare Fuel.
I wonder if every generation is terrified of the shit from the generation before, or maybe it's two generations it has to be, but I feel like this is intended to be cute and adorable. Yes. But yeah, but by the 80s, if you were to watch this, you'd be like, the fuck is with those crazy ass doll people?
Yeah.
And certainly yes. 2025, no bueno.
Setting it up, this is a dance number, a fantastical dance number that takes place on the set of the Acme Toy Maker. And it's essentially a little bit of like a Sorcerer's Apprentice kind of a thing, where she comes in and breaks her glasses, and all of the dolls sort of start coming to life, and they're like live Raggedy Ann and Andy and clowns.
She finds magical glasses there.
Excuse me. There you go.
Puts them on. The dolls come to life.
But then she breaks them.
Then she breaks them near the end. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's just all of these weird interactions and dances with different giant ass doll people. And it is, and like one's dressed in like a teddy bear, full size 6 foot teddy bear costume. And I'm like, that's how furries got started. And the whole thing was like, I found it enrapturing. I couldn't look away, but I was also horrified at everything I saw in this number. It was upsetting and it was a little scary.
Yeah. When it started, I kind of thought this was going to be like another sketch where like they started coming to life and then weird things started to happen.
Right.
But then there was just dancing.
Right.
And unlike the other ones where I was like, oh no, the dancing was actually kind of cool, or there was like a lot of effort put into it. Like, and to be, I'm sure there was effort put into it. This one, not for me. I think it was trying to make a point. It felt very like it felt like it was trying to make a Twilight Zone sort of moment. Maybe it's just the creepiness. I didn't care for.
Was a hybrid sketch musical number. There was like some physical comedy, and I don't know. I would have liked it to be ramped up a little bit more. So like, oh, we start out with like her knocking over a mannequin. And if she like did more of that sort of thing, like, whoops, oh my God, oh no, ah, and things, you know, kind of get chaotic, but they really don't. It sort of happens a little bit, then she breaks her glasses, then she sits down and sings a song, just like
us. That was the part that I want to tell you to. I was sitting down, and if I had not been sitting down already, I would have been sat at that moment. My mouth fell down to the floor, and I love it when people sing. I am the person who, whenever I'm writing things, and especially collaborating with people, they go, Andrea, not everything can be a musical number. I'm the prime offender of this. And
no, I love it.
Sit down and start singing. What?
Yeah.
After that. For what reason and how and why? And I get what they're trying to do, but
it's kind of like what I felt was happening at the with that insurance commercial. Like, it feels like a warm hug. The whole point is that you feel comforted. This lightly magical thing happens, and then our beloved Carol Burnett sings a song about. Fucking
whatever it was she was singing about. Guys, I'm gonna go back to my notes here. I've got four notes here in a row from this number. And so this is supposed to be a warm hug and light fantastical elements in a dance number with a song. So my four notes are, first note, this shit is horror. My second note, is this entertaining?
Come on.
Third note, she's singing now, ... Fourth note, okay, I guess we're done now. That was my journey of this entire number.
Moving, yeah.
Fifth note, I guess TV was just different back then.
I think that fair.
And it was.
Fair. Now, how I really do feel if at the end of it, she had sat down and opened her mouth and not sang, but just a shrill scream. Came out.
My opinion on
the entire number might have changed. I would have been, you know what? Everything that happened before, keep it. Don't change a thing. On board.
See, I think if she would have sat down and then opened her mouth and a whole bunch of spiders just came out of it, redeemed.
Yeah, I agree. Plussing it up. Yes,
this
and.
This one, I actually did jot down some lyrics and Google them, and the song is Try to Remember from the musical comedy The Fantastics from 1960. So it's a show tune. And
which have you seen that show? Mm-mm. It is fucked up.
Oh, really? No.
It's weird. Okay. I actually really like the song, but the musical is weird. Not as weird as this sketch, but
whoa. It tells an allegorical story concerning two neighboring fathers who trick their children into falling in love by pretending to feud. The fuck?
That's what that's about?
That's
the Fantastics.
I always thought the Fantastics, they performed the Fantastics at my high school and I never saw it. And I just assumed it was about like a swing band or something.
You'd think based on the name that like the tone of it would be much different than it is.
Yeah.
I had a similar thing and I went to go see it in North Hollywood a couple of years ago.
Love it.
And I learned some things. Mostly that I was wrong with my assumption.
I scrolled down and some words just popped right out at me. I was not looking. I just saw a half-breed Apache.
Oh.
The character of Mortimer is now, quote, not really an Indian, but playing one during the rape ballet sequence.
Oh, dear.
I am not positive about this. But I think that it's possible that this show comes from the same time as this TV show that we watched.
1960. So
yeah. So we're roughly the same. The type of people who watch the Carol Burnett show are the same people who are like, yep, the Fantastics.
100%.
Let's make it into a classic that sends it into summer stock and it still performs across the country, including North Hollywood. To this very day.
It's the world's longest running musical and the longest running uninterrupted show of any kind in the United States. And it features a rape ballet sequence.
What As you do.
The fuck?
Try All to right. remember.
This shit got so much weird. I don't. Oh, Jesus.
And that's the true spirit of Thanksgiving. Good night, everyone. Oh, wait.
No. We got to talk about the fact that Carol Burnett sings a song. I'm so glad we had this time together. Sure. And I was like, why do I know this? I must know it because, you know, I've heard it at some point. It's Carol Burnett. So, like, it's a cultural thing. Then I realized that I remember it because that is what Slick used to sing after his tag teams would beat somebody in WWF shows from the 80s. He would sing that mockingly when the heels destroyed some jobber tag team.
Are you referring to the Doctor of Style, Slick?
I am indeed.
He must have been a huge Fantastics fan.
He probably was.
Did you like my rape ballet of destruction? Ugh. Suck it.
Okay. We just jumped from the 80s to the late 90s there for a second.
He was ahead of his time. You know that.
Of a mixing. I do not care for that.
You're a purist. I know.
We're at the general end of the show at this point. One thing I thought was weird is during like the end number, they were like passing around a yearbook for each other to sign. And I thought that was insane.
I assume that was a regular bit that like a signature book, like, oh, thank you for coming on our show. Here, sign this. And, you know, I don't know what you do with it, but, you know.
It's like a jersey swap at the end of a football game or something.
Yeah,
like
I do whenever I guest on your show, you know.
That's true.
You said jersey swap. And for a second, I was like, are they swinging in New Jersey? Is that what they call it? They do that so much that there's a thing called a jersey swap. And why are they doing it after football games? I'm very confused. After about 6 seconds, it clicked. But, you know, Andrew, if you want a jersey swap anytime, let us know.
We'll do it.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah. We're not prudes at this show.
Frankly, it's Gina that brought it to us. Like, she's the Jersey girl.
I mean, that's the truth right there. We'll have to ask Gina what a Jersey swap is when she gets back.
Just all the details.
The last note here, there was a big thing over the credits about how lip syncing occurred. It was like a lip sync credit. And I was like, oh, they were lip syncing. Of course they were lip syncing, Ray. What are you talking about? Diane Cannon was not actually singing that song live in studio.
It was only two songs. She wasn't singing, and like the ballet number.
Jen, why were there balloons on your screen just now?
Are we celebrating? What are we celebrating?
Man,
I'm excited.
The new Mac OS has some sort of thing, and every once in a while I'll gesture and the screen will do a thing. I'm too busy looking at other tabs, so I have no idea what's going on until someone brings it up. But I think, is that a, fuck it.
Why won't ours do it?
Yeah, I want to do a thing.
You don't have the OS thing turned on.
Stupid.
It's probably for the best. I'd summon a demon that way.
Probably for the best.
Anyway, yeah. That.
So the beautiful and hot and talented Diane Cannon wasn't talented enough to even sing a song?
Well, now I'm in doubt of whether she was actually, like, it's actually her voice. I hope it was, but I don't actually know that. After what I found out about the movie White Christmas, everything is ruined for me.
Well, she's alive. We could ask her.
Get her on the show, Chan.
That was my one note that I found out about her. Still alive. I wrote it down in my notes.
Hold on. Let me put on my Johnny Carson mask. We'll Zoom her and see if we can get her into this.
Yeah, just loop her in. Call her up.
That's it. And somehow, and this is the this tells you how little happened on this show. We watched like 250% more show, and we're still ending this program at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. We had to do a lot of vamping this episode, so
we vamped.
You're welcome.
We had 51 minutes of material. We ended up talking less than any singular episode of Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling. That's all I'm trying to say.
I mean, there's meat on those bones.
Oh, well, it's a lot of beef. It's a lot of beef.
Oh, when you're taking the juice, beef right up.
Okay.
Yep. Baby.
Oh, Lordy Lou. Anyway, that's the episode of the show. Andrea, thank you so much for joining us. Tell the people at home where they can find you on social media and give us that wonderful pitch for your wrestling game again.
Yeah, find me online. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Andrea _ML, and I'm on Blue Sky at Andrea Listenberger. And check out Chapter 5 of WWE 2K25's The Island, dropping December 5th.
Love it. Chan, anything you want to promote?
My new rape ballet production is it's happening in North Hollywood. Come down and check that out.
My other show, the Who Would Win Masters show, now has new social medias. I may as well mention it. You can go to, we have a TikTok, like at Who Would Win Masters, youtube.com/@WhoWouldWinMasters. I don't know why they put the at in there for everything now, but they do. We have an Instagram page also, Who Would Win Masters. Go ahead. If you listen to this, do me a favor. We're trying to build that up, kind of starting it fresh. And we want people to see things. We got lots of clips from the shows and other various sundries that are available for your viewing pleasure. What's up?
Who Would Win Masters?
Who Would Win Masters is the name of my Who Would Win show property.
Never heard of it.
Well, you haven't been on it, so.
There's probably a good reason.
It's probably, probably for the best. Check out AE Doubleback, now apparently featuring a rape ballet.
No, absolutely not.
Oh, maybe I got that wrong.
That's a clean, family-friendly show.
Unlike this one.
Unlike, very much unlike this one.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.